Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
You're listening to the Fulham Fan Show on Love Sport with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I've been joined by the boys from the Fulhamish podcast, Love Sport's very own Dom Betts, Guy Barlow and Cam Ramsey. I just want to quickly say before we get into the show, when that intro was being played, there was two things happening. One, Guy looked like he'd been dragged to the opera or somewhere and he just did not want to be in. Nothing, not a flick of an emotion when that was being played. Dom singing and nearly dancing. I think if we get Dom singing it instead of the intro, it'll be miles better. What do we say?
It will pull people into the show, definitely.
I think you've done me a proper disservice there.
I was watching you.
I was enjoying it.
If that was Guy enjoying
soaking it. Soaking in the atmosphere,
exactly.
Mate.
It's been ages since we had that as the intro.
I know.
Normally we have Choose and Fulham, but... Yeah, no, I did
prefer
Vera Fulham. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, all right. But you didn't give much, and it was a little bit upsetting. Is that fair to say? Guy, you didn't blink from the TV.
I was lost in thought about the 3 points going to come in this weekend.
I was going to say you was lost in thought about Fabry or... Here we go. Yeah. I've been waiting a week.
Given a squad number.
Hello.
While we're on it.
Yes. What is the squad number?
31, yeah.
31. Exciting times. I wanted a cutout, a T-shirt, nothing. I thought the loving was going to continue.
But we should like have a moment for Marcelo Gallo, who wasn't given a squad number.
Oh no,
he's coming back. He's going to be given
That's
number
like
two.
Player retirement when you don't get a number. What is that?
I know Tayo Edin as well.
Yeah, I like Tayo. He's a good player, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Who else wasn't? Sad. Big Ibrahima was.
No, the best thing about the squad numbers was the whole paragraph about the number 12.
Yeah. I'm about number 12? You weren't going to do a Reading, were you, and like dedicated to the fans?
No, so basically, it said Marek Rodak has been assigned 12, a number worn by several stoppers at Craven Cottage over the years, such as Mike Taylor, David Stockdale, Mark Crossley, Tony Warner, Marcus Hanneman, Jan Lustowska, and Joe Lewis.
Joe Lewis,
esteemed company,
himself.
They say. Joe Lewis, the man who I asked to take a picture of me.
Excuse me, Joe Lewis is first choice in a top flight division right now.
I know, is it Aberdeen?
Aberdeen, yes. So it was top flight division, first choice.
Top flight.
Honestly, I messaged the lads earlier, said I could do a whole show in that paragraph.
I think we could.
Could you do it? Guy, we're waiting for
just
it,
talking of, just talking about all those goalkeepers, you could just do an entire round.
Hanneman, probably the oldest one there, as in terms of when he joined. He was in a promotion season when we won the championship. And then a fellow bald compatriot, Tony Warner. What a man.
He was awful.
Oh, what a man. Millwall legend.
And it's come out again.
So was Lustowka. They were all awful. That's why it's so funny. Not one of those goalkeepers, apart from, I don't know, Mike Taylor was all right in the championship.
Yeah, but... Still
hilarious.
But, yeah, just that was a very big detour. But yeah, squad numbers came out today, and unfortunately, Jallo didn't get one.
Is that a big moment on Fulham calendar then, squad numbers?
It must be.
Yeah,
you get beautiful paragraphs written like that. They didn't have to write that paragraph. They could have just said, "Rodak's been given number 12." They didn't go and have to find who have been our previous number 12.
Fulham write paragraphs, they write paragraphs, all right?
They love a good paragraph.
Sorry, Cam.
I don't think they put that much effort into anyone else's number, did they? It was literally just a number 12, wasn't it?
So Fabry's been given a squad number. What does this mean? I'm on the Fabry train, by the way. I'm with you.
Good.
Are we expecting like massive things? Because my excitement is through the roof.
I'm expecting to start, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. He's a Champions League... How many times do I have to say it?
I'm in after that. Champions League.
He's played the Champions League. Betts hasn't.
What can you say about that, Betts?
Well... Considering Fabry was in Spain this week, I don't think he's got too much open.
I've seen him in training photos loads. He's around.
Well, talking about Champions League, we have to start, obviously, the big story. Harvey Elliott, he's signed for Liverpool. Fulham want compensation, rumoured to be 9 million, we're not sure. What is the total story in this, and how do we feel about this? Because now he's gone, it feels like the story's dragging on a little bit, and I suppose Fulham fans want to forget it, he's gone now, or do we like, yeah, let's see how much compensation we can get?
Well, no, I think it'd be like a record if we got 9 or 10 million pounds for someone who can't even get a professional contract yet. I think we mentioned it before, though, that with Harvey Elliott, we're not missing anything to an extent, because what he's made three substitute appearances in three pointless games. You know, came off for the last 10 minutes or so away to Millwall in the cup when we were already cruising. I think maybe 3-1 at the time.
Yeah.
You know, he came on away at Wolves. We'd already been relegated. He came on away to Newcastle at home. We'd already been relegated. So we're not really missing anything. Yes, there's a lot of potential there, but. Yeah, I mean, it's not like he owes us any loyalty or anything. He's only been at the club for four seasons. He was at QPR, I believe, before that. So, I mean, if we get £10 million for him, then great.
Yeah, I completely agree. And from what's been going on social media, it seems like one to avoid anyway.
Can you genuinely see Fulham getting that amount of money for him? Because it is a lot for someone you said who can't sign a professional contract yet. He is only 16. It seems like a lot of money. How do they base these figures on? Where do they pull these figures from?
Well, it's also the fact he's been tracked by, you know, bigger clubs before Liverpool as well, like Man City, you know, Barcelona in the past as well. So he's got a good regard in Europe as well. 16 years of age, he's, you know, Premier League's youngest ever performer. That also comes with a little bit of a stature as well. So I don't really feel, you know, £10 million in the current climate is a massive figure for a 16-year-old. Yes, he hasn't necessarily, you know, played X amount of minutes in the Premier League for us at all, but to be quite honest with you, in this current climate for an English player, which always has an extra
commands
price.
More.
Commands more as a price tag. Yeah, 9, 10 million, I think, is fair.
I agree with you, Cam, there, in saying that 9, 10 million is fair in that sense. I mean, if he goes on and does brilliant for Liverpool in 2-3 years, 10 million will seem pennies. But he hasn't played the minutes to warrant that 10 million at the minute. Dom just said three appearances there, not very meaningful games. How can they just pull for 10 million?
Yeah, I know. It's the weird the way the compensation structure works within England with young players moving on. And, you know, I think Fulham will try to get as much as they can at Liverpool. It's not Liverpool are tight for cash at the moment. They haven't really splashed the cash in this summer's transfer window. Very quiet. Well, it's been very quiet for most clubs, really, this summer. I think you can only look at Rodri and, you know, Tanguy and Ndombele as the big transfers. So I think that, yeah, I mean, I'm not really bothered seeing Harvey Elliott go. He seems a bit of an odd bloke anyway, going by what you see on social media. So,
what do you mean? You don't like that haircut?
That haircut's not acceptable. I mean,
acceptable by Don. What do you think, Cam? You like the Barnet?
Hate the Barnet and don't really like the kid either, to be quite honest with you.
Oh, it's all coming out now.
It doesn't really take, you know, in the modern world, a 16-year-old to come out and what he's done on social media.
Compare it to what Sessegnon was like when he was 16.
Very level-headed and grounded and very mature, you know.
But how many 16-year-olds are you going to find out there? Sessegnon was the rarity, if you're saying that, because most of them 16. We're still, like, we're talking about Lingard this summer doing social media videos, people saying, oh, he still hasn't matured yet, and he's in his 20s.
He's like 26, 27.
But it's a bit different.
Beans.
I think it's a tiny bit different to what Harvey Elliott's come out and done on camera recently as well. You know, it's a little bit different to shouting beans at a camera to, you know, to doing what he's done. 16 years old or not, you should know better. So good riddance and good luck, Liverpool, basically.
Guy, where do you stand on this?
Harvey Elliott or beans?
On Harvey Elliott as a player, like, well, yeah, he's got terrible Barnet.
Pineapple egg is what I say.
Yeah.
That's where I stand on that. I also think he's too small at the moment anyway to be, like, anywhere near first team football, really. Like the little we saw of him, he looks like even smaller than Patrick Roberts, you know? And Patrick Roberts was deemed too small to play. So, I think he's going to be one for Liverpool's under-23s anyway. He's going to get nowhere near their first-team squads, even in League Cups, I reckon. So he's one for the future for them. In terms of the actual price tag, I think £10 million is absolutely fair. Like, we've invested a lot of money into him. He's not signing a contract for him. If he did sign a contract and left in 3 years at the end of that, we could probably command triple that, you know? Assuming he continues this trajectory that he's on. So I think Liverpool should just, like, pay up. Like, they're a massive club. Stop being cheap. Like, we asked for something. The only reason it's gone to a tribunal is because Liverpool wouldn't even name a price, apparently. Mm. Do you know?
It is strange because they lost the tribunal case where Danny Ings was concerned. They paid $8 million, wasn't it? I believe 6.5 up front.
It was the exact same thing then. Like, they just refused to, like, negotiate and let it go to tribunal. It's like, stop being cheap. We just won the Champions League. It's really annoying.
Maybe they want Fabry as part of the deal.
Yeah. There's lots
of moving parts. Cyrus Christie, I know you're all a fan of him.
I'll drive him to Liverpool myself.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is that a deal? Can we announce that on Love Sports?
Yeah, if Liverpool want him, I'll drive him there myself.
There you have it, Don Betts. You could be the mediator in between the tribunal.
There's no mediator. He's getting dropped off and I'm driving back.
Big Irish population in Liverpool, so he'll fit right in.
What? The famous Irish Christie from Coventry?
He's as Irish as they come. Come on. Well, come on.
The transfer market is obviously still ongoing. How much do Fulham still need? How much activity will there be from Fulham in this remaining window?
Well, obviously, we lost Anguissa last Friday on loan to Villarreal for the season. And I think a lot of fans are expecting him to stay this season. I think Sammy on the podcast said the Monday before he left, I think he's going to be Championship Player of the Season. Well, that turned out very well. And obviously on the previous Monday, he's stating that he couldn't see Knockout joining in a million years. So his record of predictions is going well already this season. But no, I think we've got a good starting 11, starting 10, minus Cyrus Christie. And I think that, but there's nothing after that. We'll get onto that later, but there isn't anything after that. And I think that now Anguissa's left, needs to start plugging in that midfield. I think I'm not of the opinion he's a big loss because, yes, he looked good in parts last season, but on the other three quarters of the season, he was absolutely terrible. So, yes, he looked good under Parker and he thanked Parker on social media before he left, but I don't think it's as big of a loss as everyone's making it out to be.
I feel like Fulham, from an outside perspective, have been quite active in this transfer window. I know you spoke about last year. It was all like, it seemed like Fulham done a lot, but it was on the deadline day almost. Not panic buyers, but it was very last minute. I feel like you've been quite early and executed what moves you wanted. You've brought players in, but you've also, the players that you've moved them on quite quickly as well.
Well, it's also squad retention as well, which was main factor. You know, we spoke at Fulham, we spoke to Tony Khan, and he said it's about getting your house in order to start off with, and obviously buttoning down Kearney.
It's his fault,
it's
not
deal.
In order anyway.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, come on, you
shots
get
fired.
That, get a Hoover out, man. Come on. But the fact that we've signed, you know, Mitrovic onto a new long term deal as well, and Kearney, you know, Steph Joe still at the club, K Max still at the club. Those are lads that know exactly how and what it takes to actually get out of the Championship and back into the Premier League. So that was the crux of the transfer window for us, is just making sure that we keep that familiarity and squad, you know, squad loyalty as well. So
was it lessons learned from past year then, Cam?
I'd say so, because the last time, you know, we got relegated into the Championship, we had such a mismatched squad. And, you know, players playing out of position as well. It was a new lineup every single week, and I think we just needed to have that stability back again. So, in terms of business, we've done very, very well this transfer window, but we're still expecting more to come in.
From listening to you guys in the past, I know you spoke about that Fulham were a little bit slow off the mark in announcing with a stand and the tickets and where was everyone going to go, and you was waiting on news on that. Then last year with the players. It won't mean much to non-fans of Fulham Football Club, but is it the little things that count? Because now that has been sorted, now the transfer window is shaping up, now Scott Parker's going into the season, you seem like you've got your first team. Can you sort of have a little bounce in your step ahead of Saturday?
Well, I think it's one of the first times we've been looking forward to a season due to we can see there being some success from it. I mean, if you look at the season where we did finish in the playoffs and lost to Reading, no one was expecting playoffs that year. Yes, we had a good team, and on paper you'd argue that team probably should be finishing in the top six, but yeah, it's the first time in a while Fulham fans have been looking forward to the season because we actually think we can do quite well.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It is such a bonus to have like that starting 11 sorted. That's something that, as Cam alluded to, like in the last time we relegated, the now like famous first game back at Ipswich, we're like, I think we finished.
What a day.
We finished the match with an average age of maybe like 20, 21. Like
we played Cameron Burgess, a 20-year-old centre-back who's just a massive lump in holding midfield.
Yeah.
And what a day.
Cameron Burgess just signed for Salford, is he? I think.
Yeah. What a time to be alive.
Yeah, anyway.
Mighty Salford.
This time we're nowhere near that bad shape. I mean, I said this before, but like the weak link of the club is probably Scott Parker.
After Cyrus Christie, obviously.
I'd say Scott Parker's a bit more important than Cyrus Christie overall, but, you know, I'll leave that one for you guys to debate.
Well, Guy just mentioned then that Scott Parker is the weak link. It's very interesting. What other weak links are there in Fulham, though, and what do they need to do in the transfer market next?
Love Sport.
You're listening to the Fulham Fan Show featuring Wiley here on Love Sport and the Fulhamish podcast. Love Sport's very own Don Betts, Guy Barlow, Cam Ramsey and me, Charlie Hawkins. I don't know if that's the song that Dom is looking forward to hearing once he gets back into King's Cross this Saturday and has a few drinks after Fulham hopefully pick up the 3 points at Oakwell. But before we get into that game and we talk a little bit about that, I find something very interesting. Guy's mentioned this now for the past couple of weeks, how Scott Parker is the supposedly weak link. I don't think he means it in a detrimental way. He's the weak link, but he's the sort of area of concern at the minute for Fulham fans because the Championship is a very difficult league. Scott Parker has no managerial experience. It's going to be a big task for him. Do you think that now that the transfer window, even though it's still open, Guy, and the players, you might need a few more, is this just about making sure that Scott Parker has enough in the locker to deal with his first season?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you say deal with the first season, but the expectation is promotion. Like, it's
we don't get promoted, he's a failure.
Yeah,
That brutal. You don't get promoted, he's a failure.
Definitely.
I'm not saying this necessarily be sacked, but the season will be deemed as a failure.
But it will, and will that be his fault?
Not well, the
players, just him and you'd argue so, but then you can argue if we didn't win the playoff final, Slavisa would have failed in that season.
True.
Because we lost in the playoff semi-finals the year before, you'd expect the aim for the next season is to get promotion. Mm. And so if he didn't win that game against Aston Villa, that would also be deemed a failure. I'm not saying the manager to then be sacked, but the season will not be deemed as a success if we don't get promoted.
It's interesting just because when Frank Lampard's just been appointed Chelsea manager, everyone says he's success at Derby. Derby didn't get promoted, but we keep labelling
he's
successful.
At Derby.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. But when we talk about him, we say he's success. And Guy says if Fulham don't go up, Scott Parker, it will be a failure, not a success.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you can't be that. That is quite reductive, you know, saying it's not as black and white as that. Because lots of things can affect it. I mean, like you could argue that Scott Parker might have succeeded in managing the players and like learning the role and like the transfer side of it. But the overall objective is to get promoted. And you mentioned that he needs to be given the best possible footing to do that. And with the exception of Anguissa, which we just talked about, I reckon he absolutely has. Like he's been given the perfect platform for success. So it's completely up to him now.
Is that a massive problem? Because I know we touched upon it last week. He has no margin of error. You're saying he's got the best footing to do it. Fulham are favourites, so that's a massive pressure. He can't go wrong because even the Fulham fans who are expecting promotion are saying that if we don't get promoted, it's failure. And you said, oh, it's not as black and white as that. But Cam, I say to you, it is as black and white as that because football is only judged on a results-based business. Fulham want to go up. You're not going to care what he does on a Monday to Friday, putting an arm around a player saying, oh, but he really coaches well because you only care about the 3 points on a Saturday.
No, completely. With the squad at his disposal as well, they should definitely be getting promoted, you know, top one, top two, if not through the playoffs as well, you know. We know what kind of character Scott Parker is as a player. He's very, you know, letter
aggressive.
Of the law, aggressive. But he was a leader as well. And, you know, yes, he's inexperienced, but you expect a player of his calibre, where he's been in his career, the managers that he's learnt off as a player. And, you know, yes, Claudio Ranieri's reign at the club wasn't necessarily the most successful. It was an absolute car crash. But he would have definitely picked up a few pointers from the Italian as well. So I'd like to think that he has an idea of what's going to happen next season, but completely right. We need promotion and we need to get back to the Premier League and we need to right a few wrongs and redeem ourselves in the top flight. And if that doesn't happen, then what's going to happen to the club in terms of the future? You know, we're going to be dwindling in the Championship. We lost the direction again. It just means getting another manager in that may well, you know, do just as bad a job as in the next season. So he's got a big, big, big campaign coming up.
If we're deeming it failure then, that Fulham don't get promoted, that's a failure on Scott Parker's fault. But you're saying it's a failure, but he doesn't deserve to be sacked.
Well, I say again, it depends where you finish. Let's say if he finished is in the top six and let's say we lose in the playoff semi-finals, I can't see him getting a sack. If we do a Swansea and finishing about 10th, I can see him being let go and we bring someone in next summer because we can't afford to be hanging around the Championship for 3 years if the Khans have got their plan of getting us back to the Premier League. I mean, I'm not bothered in the slightest staying in the Championship for the next 3 or 4 years. But for me,
I don't know if I believe that either.
Why would I want to go to the Premier League?
Why wouldn't you? Football's about playing in the top flight.
Football's
it might be more fun playing on a Saturday at 3 o'clock so you can go out with your mates and have an away day trip and enjoy it. Easier to get tickets, easier to go and have fun. But let's have it right. You do want to play in the Premier League. Don't want to be a yo-yo club, no, but you do want to be an established Premier League side.
Why do I want to be in the Premier League?
Why wouldn't you?
What is there to achieve for a club like us? What is there to achieve?
Yeah, but surely you have like sky high ambitions. You want to keep trying to push on. Fulham got to Europa League final.
That's exactly the point. We can't see us achieve more than we've already seen us achieve. Our biggest achievement, our next achievement would be getting
into. You can win it.
The thing is, you can't nowadays because the Premier League that is there is now. I only watched it last season because we were in it. This season, I will watch so little Premier League football because I'm not bothered by it. I'm not bothered by what league we're in. Yes, we're playing against better teams, but I'm just seeing it getting battered every week.
Of course, that's not fun for a fan. I do understand your point, and I love the Championship. But I agree, if Fulham are going to go up and get battered every week and be a yo-yo club, then yeah, I want to go down the Championship and win every week, and we're going to enjoy the season a lot more. But I want option C, which is Fulham go up and they contend every week and they're a top-half finish, and they're mixing it with the likes, and they can do a Wolves, and they can, you know, they can be bigger than West Ham, better than West Ham.
No one does Wolves. Look at promoter teams.
Wolves just done it.
Yeah, exactly. But when was the last promoter team to finish like 7th or 8th in the league? It doesn't happen here. And I think, if you're a team like, I don't know, like a Bournemouth or a Southampton, well done, you finished 14th or 15th in the Premier League every season. But that's boring, as far as I'm concerned.
Where do you two stand on this?
I love Championship football. You know, I love being a contender every week, like Dom as well. You know, going down to matches and actually feeling like you're going to come off on a 3-0 win against another contender and another, you know, top table squad is a great feeling. And the Premier League for me last year, it was such an underwhelming environment. Being back there initially was absolutely awesome, and to, you know, be revered as a top 20 club in England was absolutely fantastic too. But yeah, it was disheartening, and it was probably the worst season I've actually known as a Fulham fan and a football fan in general, just because it was just an absolute whipping stage for us, and we weren't picking up any points or any kind of optimism at all. But now we have it back in the Championship, and as a Fulham fan, other than the Europa League season, of course, that's where, you know, the feeling of being a real true football fan has come from.
If you speak about the last, I don't know, 25 or 30 years, after the Europa League final, Fulham fans' most enjoyable seasons will be 2000-2001 when we won the league and walked it, and last season, or 2 seasons ago, when we won the Championship final. I guarantee you, they'll be the Fulham fans' favourite 2 seasons after that, and if it's not that, it'll be when we got promoted from League 2 or promoted from League 1.
No, I completely agree that. I'm not denying it. Guy, I want to know your thoughts on it. But surely, isn't there just a little part of you like, I do want to compete against the best. I want to be in top flight. I want to see how far we can go. And things can change. You say, oh, well, how many teams do that? Wolves go up. Well, Wolves just done it. We've seen Leicester win the league. It does happen. This is football. We never know what's around the corner. Fulham might get an investor like Man City and start competing. Surely you would like to be up there. Listen, football's a strange world. We just don't know. Sorry, Guy.
No. I guess I'm kind of in between, but in that I agree with what Dom's saying about, like, we have actually been there and done it. Like, we were in there for 13 years. We have, like, seen us beat all these top sides. And whilst that was fun, yeah, like, I remember those moments, and I'm happy for those memories. But if you look at the overall picture of football, which is what I'm thinking about, like, heading these rumours of this Super League and thing, like Man City and Liverpool and, like, AC Milan, who aren't even in the Champions League, being part of this kind of alleged Super League, like, they can go. Like, as far as I'm concerned, I don't want to be part of that, you know? I would be much happier if, like, they all went away, because I know that we're never going to be able to compete with them. People went on about how good the title race was last season. It wasn't good. They won both teams won every week. It wasn't interesting, you know? Like, there was that gap was between the top two and then the next four and then the next four and then, yeah, the bottom three. There was no, like, real competition in the league. It wasn't fun to be a part of. And I agree with what Cam says about it being one of the worst seasons. It was underwhelming, and it was so, like, a lack of fight.
In the Premier League, what difference does it really make if you finish 16th or 9th? What difference does that make? Nothing. You don't remember the season you finish 9th. You remember the seasons you either have a cup run, or you remember the seasons where you finish to qualify for Europe or do well in Europe or even compete in Europe. Because it's like where I hear West Ham fans saying, that, what, I don't want to get Europe, it distracts from my league campaign. Mate, you're not finishing in the top four. If you're going to aim for the top six, what happens when you finish sixth? You end up in Europa League. It's just a redundant argument. And every football fan who is a team who finishes at 14th, 15th, they should be striving to finish seventh or win a cup or get to a cup run to experience European football, because it will be the best days you have as a football fan.
Yeah, and it's like when Leicester lost to Newport last year when they did a weakened team away in League Two Newport. That was one of the most stupid things I've ever seen. You've got an opportunity here to go on a cup run. I mean, Wolves got to the final. That's exactly what you want. And yes, the final was boring and it was ludicrous. But that just showed just how big the gap is, you know, in a cup final of the oldest cup competition in the world, like England's Premier Cup competition, that one team beat another team 6-0. Because of the resources they have. It was an embarrassment to the competition.
And even a poor side, really, are they? Before
exactly.
They
finished seventh.
Yeah, it's not like
Six
a League
below.
One side, yeah.
Yeah, Wolves would never beat, Southampton 6-0 in a cup final, would they? Mm. The disparity is absolutely insane. And that's not fun to be a part of, that money side of the game.
It sounds like I've disagreed with you, Dom. I haven't. I'm just trying to say that you had those good days. Why can't you have them again? There's something surely that we want to keep aiming higher, not to just sit there, because I don't want to say that Fulham are better than the Championship.
What can you realistically achieve? I know you speak about Leicester, but that's just a freak accident, and that's facts. It's a freak accident, and that will never happen again. And for Wolves, yes, you may finish seventh and you get into Europa League, great, but Wolves, again, totally different model. It's not like in 2010 or 2009 where you can finish seventh, you know, because there is this six teams and then the other 14 league teams. When it's great, you finish seventh, you get into Europe, that's great. But as I said, I think it's different for a team if you're thinking about a Watford or not quite Leicester, but for a Wolves, because for me, I can't see us ever achieving more than we already have. I know it may be a weird mindset to have, but I realistically can't see, in the state of football is now, I can't see Fulham topping a Europa League final, beating, it's not even we got to the final, it's who we beat. We had Roma in the group stage for starters, then in the first quarter knockout round, we beat the holders in Shakhtar Donetsk, who are still the best team I've seen play at Craven Cottage.
Easily.
Then we beat in the round, was it the round of 16, we beat Juventus 4-1 at home after being 3-1 down after the first leg and going down 1-0 after 5 minutes. We beat the German champions in Wolfsburg, we had Edin Dzeko up front, unfortunately Phyllis McGaffer's manager, Graffiti in there as well, Diego. Then we beat the people who were hosting the game in Hamburg in the semi-finals, stopped them hosting a final in their own backyard. And then we played against Atletico Madrid, the likes of David De Gea, Diego Forlan, Sergio Aguero. You know, it's the whole run which will be remembered forever.
I remember it was incredible, and I think that's what I'm saying, that you had that, you could do that again. And listen, I understand as a fan, it's all about enjoyment, experience. You want the happier days that you're going to have in the Championship. I completely get it, and who am I to deny you that? I'm just saying, if you have done that once before, why can't you do it again? I know you're saying
it's
mindset.
It's not mindset. It's not the same.
You just said it was mindset.
No, it is a mindset that we have as fans, but it's not the same game. Simply not the same game anymore. Because there was obviously the top four, but there was teams who were pushing. Aston Villa were pushing for it. Spurs were pushing for it. Now, for me, it's redundant, because there's no chance of competing at that level when even get a pro, because the other teams are just so much better than you.
And say we did get seventh, yeah? Look what happened to... I know Burnley is a different example because they've got a different financial model on it, but it decimated the first half of their season. If you haven't got the resources to actually cope with a European run, or put your... Because Premier League has been flouted as this gold mine.
That's another problem, is people want to prioritise the Premier League over the Europa League, which is the most ludicrous thing I've ever heard. Because, okay, if you're maybe a team like Arsenal United, you need to push into the top four, maybe, I understand that. But then again, why would you... Surely you'd rather win... surely a team like Burnley would want to put all their eggs in the Europa League basket. I know you're going to be in the Premier League, but if they had the ability to stay up in the league, and I think...
If they can win a European trophy.
Not necessarily win a European trophy, but just experience it as a fan. I think they did get a very tough run in the qualifying stage. They've got Istanbul, Başakşehir and Olympiakos. Two very, very tough games there. And obviously, Aberdeen they got in their first game. But yeah, for me, I think that realistically, if we are back at... It's not I want to be in the Premier League. I just want the euphoria of promotion. It's a very different thing.
Yeah.
You want the euphoria of promotion, but then...
You want the euphoria of success, but you don't... The end product isn't actually what makes you want that success. It's the feeling of the success itself.
Because
we weren't so glad we got promoted to the Premier League. We were so happy because we won at Wembley.
Well, there you have it. We'll agree to disagree. I felt like I started saying there, and I wanted to back out. I wasn't sure. Dom looked a bit... he looked a bit scary at times, but it's a mindset. We agree to disagree. They are back in the Championship. They're going to win every week. It's going to be a better fan experience. We're going to have the listener questions next. Love Sport. You're listening to the Fulham Fan Show on Love Sport, and I've been joined by the boys from the Fulhamish podcast, Love Sport's very own Dom Betts, Guy Barlow, and Cam Ramsey, and me, Charlie Hawkins. I'm glad to say me and Dom have made up. I don't know, until tomorrow, and he's probably saying lots of nasty things about me to everyone. I wanted Guy to interject or agree with me at least, because I didn't want it to be 3-on-1. Guy, I looked to you, I thought our Fabry connection weren't to be. Cam, we're still bonding. It's going to blossom later on in the season. I'll go at Dom again at a later date. But it is now time when I can sit back. I don't have to agree, because it is the listener questions. So there is a few, and it's always good to have questions in. You can always get your questions in. Tweet us at Love Sport Radio. The first one comes from Mark Moody. He says, if the worst come to the worst, Christie at RB or Odie?
Adoy.
I don't know where I've got that from. My producer's laughing in my ear.
Oh, don't worry. Someone's American commentator once says Denis Odoir.
Odoir.
Yeah. All right, I'll go with that. Who would you choose?
Well, it's not going to be Christie. It's just going to have to be Odoi then, isn't it?
Odoi.
Excuse me. One thing you might not know is only second to my love of Fabry is my love of Odoi.
Guy, don't you come at me after. You just saw what happened in the last one. I'm losing friends quick. How to lose friends and alienate people. Cam, I've only got you now, mate.
Denis Odoi, without a doubt. Yeah, you know, if he can pull another, you know, backflick off, you know, couple of times this season, I'll be perfectly fine.
I'd rather have Denis Odoi playing on one foot than have Christie starting in the team. He just needs to go. And Odoi, well, it's right back is his predominant position, right?
Yeah, well, he played left back as well. He's a versatile man, Dom.
Just plays anywhere.
Versatile.
It's man. Belgian Chris Baird.
The next question is from Swiss FFC. Tim Ream seems to be the forgotten man, the rock who pulled us up into the EPL. Almost all players have a season to forget, yet we expect him to perform. Can we expect Tim Ream to perform this season? And why is he not talked about when we talk about the core to our spine?
Well, yeah, it's only a year on from when he won our player of the season, and he was absolutely phenomenal in that promotion season. He was the rock at the back. He was the only, well, competent defender, pretty much, out of that back four, because you had Target and Frederick bombing up so far up there. So, yeah, no, I do think Ream, but I think what happened is that injury he got last summer, I'm not saying it's ruined him, but he's not been the same player since he come back from that. But, you know, if I know Mawson picked up a knock on the weekend, I don't know how serious that is. Apparently he's back in training, but, you know, Mawson's basically just got a glass knee, so you're always going to need backup for him. And, you know, Tim Ream, you know, that's what I said about him and Kevin McDonald. I don't know why people are necessarily writing these players off when, you know, a year ago there were our highest voted players when it came to player of the season.
Yeah, and it's timely because Ream was literally back in training today, wasn't he? So he's not going to be ready for the new season. But I think that he definitely will have a part to play. Like, it's weird to think last year he did one player of the season, or the year before, rather.
And he's also come back with a Lionel Messi-esque kind of beard as well, hasn't he? So that's a huge statement from the American as well. Maybe a little bit more flair and guile in his game. But, yeah, I think if Mawson can keep himself fit and Tim Ream sitting next to him, that's a great
partnership. We all know Mawson is not going to keep himself fit.
They play in the same position, don't they?
This is a dream world I'm living in here, Dom. But, yeah, those two together and that centre-half would be fantastic.
As well, but, like, they when I say same position, obviously centre-half, but they both play left centre-half as well. Like, so it's unlikely we'll see
them together. Yeah, but you've got Maxi Lamarche on as well, who's lost, isn't it?
Get a back five in, get two Trey Cartistas in front of them, easy.
I reckon that might have been the first time Tim Ream was compared to Lionel Messi, but
I doubt
he enjoyed it.
I doubt it as well. Yeah, but it certainly won't be the last, either.
They're in the same merit. They go hand in hand, they do.
Both got famous left pegs.
The next question is from Smiley FIFA. With the current lack of midfield depth, do you think some youth players like O'Reilly and Francis will be given chances in the Championship?
Well, at the moment, they might have to because there's no one else available. At the moment, you've got, obviously, K-Mac, you've got Stephen Jansen, you've got TC. But I'm thinking of Ibrahim Asise. And after that, in the first team...
Sorry, who?
Ibrahim, here we go again, Asise.
Oh, thank you.
But after that, there really isn't any options. So you would expect... I want to see O'Reilly come in because he's been so highly regarded for so long now. Obviously, he's been on the last, I want to say, two or three pre-season tours with the main team. And obviously, he moved into a different position for the under-23s last season. He played more of a deeper role, which is probably helpful for us because you see De La Torre as more of covering for Tom Kearney here. But yeah, I do think if we're going to sign any players this season, or for the rest of the window, sorry, that centre midfielders is a massive option because there's just such little depth there.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of De La Torre, like, I've actually, from what I've seen of him, he does look like a half-decent player.
He looked really good away at Millwall last year.
Yeah. Pretty tidy.
And we've kept him on for a reason. Like, he's still, you know, a squad player. I reckon he could see a bit of time this year.
Yeah, definitely. He and O'Reilly in the midfield, they could definitely make a difference. You know, a bit of a youth exuberance in there as well.
Everyone talks about O'Reilly as being a youngster, but he's a fairly physical bloke for his age.
He's 6 foot two, isn't
he? Physical bloke.
Yeah, he's 6'2". He's not like a 5'8", you know, like weak centre midfielder. So, yeah, I think... I'm not sure about Tyrese Francois, but I think that O'Reilly and De La Torre could have a part to play this season because they've both been in the first team plans for a while now.
Next question is from Adam Brett. Do you agree that in the first half against West Ham, we were being outnumbered in the midfield because of Cavalero and Knockaert? They were playing too wide.
I'm sorry, but that is kind of their primary objective as, you know, wingers to play out wide.
Oh, those bloody wingers, men playing out wide.
I love the way that people expect wingers to almost become inverted forwards automatically. I'm sorry, but if you play along the channels and genuinely you do try and hug the touchline to stretch the game, so we may well have been outnumbered against a very, very well-run Premier League side under Pellegrini as well. So, in a way, yeah, we were outnumbered, but you can't necessarily...
Yeah, we outnumbered for all of last season.
Yeah, exactly. Don't pass the buck on to Knockaert and Cavalero, when they've only just come into the squad and they're trying to find their feet. So,
Tom,
fair enough.
You were at that game, weren't you?
What, West Ham?
West Ham?
No, of course I don't go to West Ham. I
believe you said, I can't think of a bigger waste of my time.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly what my words were, and I proved to be correct.
I think those words might have even been a little bit stronger. But
no,
we won't,
doubt
we, yeah, we won't repeat them.
Don't sound like me.
The next question is from Ollie. How many more signings do you want or expect from now until the end of the transfer window? And also, now the Sessegnon interest has settled down a little bit, would you start him as a winger over the additions of Knockaert and Cavalero?
If we start off with the signings, I think minimum three for me. I think there's still three loan spaces left in the matchday squad because you're allowed five. And for me, it may be, I think we're kind of relying on waiting for this Harvey Elliott compensation money and possibly Sessegnon money, if he was to go, to come in, provide us with £25-30 million for us to disposal this summer. But for me, a right back, a central midfielder, and then either a centre back or a backup striker. But I think centre back's probably a bigger priority, so I'll probably go centre midfielder, like a number eight type centre to back up. Like when we had Norwood, basically, a first team right back and then centre back cover. I think the centre mid and centre back is more about squad depth, whereas we do need that starting right back.
Yeah, I mean, Rui Font's in the squad, so we don't need striker cover, do we?
No, definitely not.
Can you set that back, please?
He's a PSG player.
Unless we're playing Ipswich away every single week, I don't see the need for Rui Font.
Again, he's played European football. Finished second in the French division last year.
Against PSG, didn't he, last year?
He did.
Exactly.
Giant slayer.
He's going to tear at the championship, just like he did the first time.
The final question is from Clint McClindon. He says, what is your favourite Fulham season opener that you've attended or seen? His was the 2012 5-0 drubbing of Norwich.
I want to say, if we analyse it on the game... Then obviously that Norwich game, because I think we were joint top of the league, because it's with Swansea, I want to say, and I think we felt like we were on top by like alphabetical order or something, because F as opposed to S. But as a day goes, that Ipswich away first game back in the championship was good fun, great fun.
No, it wasn't.
It was a great day out. Apart from the 2 hours in the middle of in between like 5:30 and 7:30, it was quite good.
Yeah, no, I'm. Put me in the spot here, actually. I can't think. I'm only thinking about the last season. I was so excited for the Palace at home, and we obviously lost thanks to Favre.
The Friday night at Newcastle home was decent.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Dennis Adoy ended Paul Dummett's career.
That was a great shot.
That was the best bit of skill I've ever seen. Honestly, that was absolutely mad.
And that was mad as well. We had like no expectation.
No, because we had like Matt Smith up front.
Big smudge up top.
He scored a winner. What do you mean? What do you mean? why are you digging him out when he scored a winner?
I was going to say Norwich, but I have to say Newcastle was... That was one hell of an occasion, because we were going to get wiped before the game, allegedly. So to walk away with a 1-0 win was glorious.
Yeah. I would say that 5-0 win was good fun, because we were top of the league, and Mladen Petric just bagging goals for fun.
The guy was an absolute genius, wasn't he?
Well, they were your listener questions. The last one was, what was your favourite season opener? Talking of season openers, you start against Barnsley this week, and next we've got Carlo on to tell us about Barnsley. Love Sport. You're listening to the Fulham Fan Show on Love Sport with me, Charlie Hawkins, and I've been joined by Dom Betts, Guy Barlow, and Cam Ramsey. It is the season opener, just a few days away. We've been speaking about it. Harvey Elliott's gone. We don't care. But real football is starting. And I'm delighted to say we've now got Carlo on from the Reds Report to talk a little bit about Barnsley, Fulham v Barnsley in the opening game. It is away to Barnsley. Carlo, thanks for joining us. How are Barnsley feeling ahead of the new season?
Well, after a very successful season in League One, where we sort of broke all sorts of records, I think initially some of the key players last season decided to leave, mainly Ethan Pinnock and Liam Lindsay in defence, as well as keeper Adam Davies. So 10 new players have been brought in, and I think whilst we're all excited that we can stop watching the cricket and start watching real sport again, where you can actually cheer and sing and clap and swear now and then.
Not on this show.
We played a friendly. Well, and there's no such thing as a friendly when we play Sheffield United, but it was billed as a friendly on Saturday. And whilst we're all very excited for the new season back in the Championship, it was very telling that three of the four defenders are new players. And I think that showed. But yeah, incredibly happy that the season is starting again. Slightly disappointed that we've got Fulham at home, who, for fellow presenters of the Reds Report, Kyle Walker and Chris Ridyard, we had a bit of a meeting the other day, and I asked them, who's your top three for promotion? And all three of us put Fulham in there. So I don't know if you can live with the expectation. I don't know if you have that expectation, but I think definitely for the rest of the Championship, with the players you've brought in, listen, any test, it's Fulham. So yeah, we'll have to see how we cope.
Obviously, the most things that have gone Fulham fans' minds is the return of Cawley Woodrow, obviously. Who didn't, to be fair, he never really got his chance at the club. He always came off the bench. But I mean, he's been bragging in the goals left, right, and centre for you last season.
Yeah, he has. So he came over. He got injured in his medical, which is never a good sign. Well, you know all about that. You know all about that. You've got Dean Mawson playing for you.
What kind of medicals are Barnsley running up there? What does he have to do? He didn't make him do the tough mother, did you?
He didn't start playing, so he signed early in the season after Tom Bradshaw left us for Millwall, but didn't actually start his first game till November. So to get 20-plus goals, which he did last season, absolutely phenomenal. And then he started a really good partnership with Kiefer Moore, and then Kiefer Moore fell really awkwardly and had some sort of head injury, so he was out. So, I think, up front, Cawley Woodrow seems to be that pedigree striker that we've been wanting for a long time. And he's that type of striker. He can score from outside the box. He can, go past two or three people and score. So, very happy that he's a player in red on Saturday and not in the Fulham white.
So, approaching the game on Saturday at Oakwell, of course, we've already talking about the magician Cawley Woodrow. Who else have Fulham got to look out for? Whatever catalysts in your squad that are going to cause us problems, because it's notorious that we have got quite a shaky defence, which is porous and can be attacked and hurt.
I think our midfield last season chipped in with all the goals. So Alex Mowat, ex-Leeds, did really well. And Cameron McGeehan, who's, we bought him a couple of seasons ago after he was returning from an injury where he broke his leg. First season with us, he was sent out on loan. Then Daniel Stendel came in last season, brought him back, and he was almost an ever-present in the centre of midfield. So there's a lot of competition for places in the centre of midfield. And then if you look at people that we've brought in, Malik Wilkes from Leeds on a four-year contract. He was on loan at Doncaster last season, player of the season for them. He played on Saturday, very, very tricky customer, very, very good on the ball. And then last week, Connor Chaplin, striker from Coventry, again on a four-year deal, was brought in. And I was doing commentary for the local hospital radio, and you can tell my eyesight's going bad because I refer to him as an Eden Hazard sort of player. Not because he's good on the ball, but he just really looks like him. But he had flashes where it just seems that he seamlessly just got used to the squad position and everything else. So I think, yeah, Reds fans are very, very excited to see more of Wilkes and Chaplin in the next few weeks.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously, we're kind of got different objectives, as you know, and like our budget is different to yours, having just been relegated. But like, what other teams are you looking at in terms of rivals? Because I guess staying up is the priority. So like, who do you think could be your rival for that?
I think if you look at sort of like the bookmakers, Barnsley will, whatever division we're playing, will always be favourites for relegation. We were last year in League One and we finished second. I think for Barnsley, we need to look at teams like Charlton, Luton, maybe Hull, Millwall, and we need to beat those teams. I think Wigan, Reading probably as well. And I think if this is all about staying in this league, like I say, 10 new players, rumours of an 11th joining maybe before Saturday, which is Tom Pearce, who's at Leeds at the moment, again, 21-year-old defender, England under-21 international. But if you look at those sort of teams, you know, teams like Fulham, Cardiff, West Brom, I think they'll be up there at the end of the season. So, and then you've got a pack in the middle. But for us, I think, yeah, Birmingham, Queen's Park Rangers, Millwall, Hull, and obviously the other teams that came up with us last season, being Charlton and Luton. And I think for us, it's about, you know, staying in this league and beating them. Most Barnsley fans will be happy fifth or sixth from bottom, as long as we stay in this league.
Obviously, you spoke about it earlier, but obviously the loss of Ethan Pinnock, Liam Lindsay, and obviously Adam Davis. Obviously, that's your core at the back. Are you worried with a brand new, obviously back four or core of your defensive line, that the likes of Mitrovic, Caviar, and Knockaert are just going to cause mayhem?
Yeah, we weren't so worried till we saw who you were buying. But then, yeah. The thing they've all got, so all the players we've brought quite a few defenders in. Mads Andersen, 6'5", pure Danish bee for bacon. I don't know what they have in that country. looked absolutely solid. What you expect from a Scandinavian defender. Absolutely no nonsense. Nice blonde hair. But can play a bit of football. Toby Simic, we bought from Wimbledon, and I read up on him when we bought him. It said, this was the Wimbledon website, so comfortable on the ball, in defence or going forward. I just say he didn't have his best match on Saturday, because he looked quite shaky, and rumours on the terraces were that he might have to look for a replacement, because it just looked like he's just not adjusted maybe to, you know, life in the Championship or life playing at Barnsley from Wimbledon where he came from. And somebody like an Anthony Knockaert literally will, you know, I can't say will score a hat-trick, but he'll have plenty of chances to score. But I suppose what's last Saturday, they've had a week to train on, and manager Daniel Standall has said that he's seen where work needs to be done. He was quite pleased overall. Always hard to say when you lose 4-1 against your rival who live, you know, 15 miles from here, but hey, it was a friendly. So, yeah, I think when you've got one defender played last season, and he wasn't a regular, and I think we did so well last season because Ethan Pinnock, by far player of the season for us, with Liam Lindsay, were just absolutely solid. When you've got, I think, 19 or 20 matches with clean sheets, that says a lot about, you know, your central defensive pairing. So, it's going to be interesting what training has been done this week and what its starting lineup will be, because I think it will differ very much from the one that started against Sheffield United on Saturday because of the performance, especially in defence.
Carlo, just very quickly then, what is your score prediction for Saturday in what is the season opener?
Well, there's two. So, my heart says Barnsley's been unbeaten at home since March 2018, and all last season we went unbeaten in the league. So my heart says, if we get a draw, that'd be fantastic. My heart says, Carlo, wake up. You've been promoted. They've been relegated. The squad you've got, in fairness with some of these players, you could argue, could be, you know, a Premier League squad. So, yeah, my head says we'll probably lose it 2-1. And my head says, no, 1-1. And we'll just park a bus as soon as we score that equaliser and make it impossible for you to go away with any more than just a 1 point from Oakwell.
Well, Carlo, you did wake up enough to join us on the Fulham Fan Show. We really appreciate you coming on. Carlo from the Reds Report there. He had two score predictions, went with his heart, went with his head. Just very quickly, from the three of you, what's the score going to be this Saturday?
I reckon 3-1 Fulham.
3-0 Fulham. Clean sheet.
I reckon 3-1. 3-1 Fulham.
So you're all going for three goals, 3 points in the bag. You did hear it there, though, Barnsley. They're on a bit of an unbeaten run. Are they a dangerous, tough game to start with, especially away?
It is a kind of tough game, but you've got to remember, they've lost their goalkeeper and two starting centre-backs from last season, so their defensive organisation is probably not going to be up to scratch, and we've got our attacking is where we're going to be good this season. So you expect the likes of Mitrovic, Caviero, and Knockaert to be getting the goals. And I think I'm hoping, you know, if one of them, if they all get one on a Saturday, that'd be great.
Well, you're predicting a big performance, 3-0 or 3-1. It doesn't really matter how you get the win. It's all about the 3 points, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And that's been our problem recently, is we haven't started the season brightly. And that's what we need to do this season, to push ourselves and make sure we're not playing catch-up again in the second half of the season.
Well, there you have it. Fulham are playing Barnsley this week in the season opener in the Championship. We're predicting 3 points. 3 goals for Fulham. It's in the bag.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.